Hi, I'm Jessica, and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Sarah, for asking me to speak this afternoon. I'm grateful to be at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm grateful to be sober today, and it's an honor and a privilege to be able to participate in my recovery. Sobriety date is November 10th, 2008. My sponsor is Natalie A., and my home group is the Draper Group. Those were three things I was told to get when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. They've changed throughout my sobriety, but I've not my sobriety date, but the other two have changed. But I always make sure that I have those three things. I guess I'll just share a little bit of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up in what I thought was a pretty normal home. Looking back on it, it probably wasn't that normal, but, you know, my dad was a single dad. He raised us. I had au pairs from other countries that came and lived with us and would take us to and from school because my dad was working all the time. And my mom was a drug addict and wasn't really in my life, you know, most of it growing up. She would always say she'd be there and wouldn't show up. And I became used to that. And I was the oldest of three younger siblings, and I helped raise them, and life was okay. But I just felt like I never fit in, and I never had a place. And I was like I felt too old to hang out with the kids my age and too young to hang out with the adults. And I didn't really know what to do. And I was always super anxious. And the first thing I started escaping in was reading. You know, I would get in trouble, and my dad would take the light bulbs out of my room because I'd stay up all night and read. I wasn't allowed, like, I'd stay under my covers reading with flashlights, and I'd get in trouble for it. But I could escape into the books, and my life was okay because I just kind of pretend that was my life. And that worked for a little while. I was a straight-A student at school. I did, you know, really, really well. I never got in trouble for anything because I was like, you know, I did well in school, and my dad looked the other way, and my younger brother and sister took all the heat, and life was great. I went to private school when I was in seventh grade, and I felt like that was my problem. Like, I didn't fit in with those people there. I didn't have as much money. I didn't have the same jewelry or clothes, and I didn't live in the same area, and I didn't drive as nice of a car. And I really felt like that private school was my problem. I stayed there for a couple years, and I was going to seminary in the morning, so I'd go to seminary with one of the other kids that went there, and then we'd smoke pot on the way there, and then we would, he'd take me to school, and we'd go to school, and I hated smoking pot. That was, like, my first kind of, like, I'd started doing that before I drank, and I did it to fit in. Like, I hated the way it made me feel, but I kept doing it because I wanted to fit in with these people. I don't remember the first time that I drank. I remember one of the first times I snuck out of the house, out of my best friend Mandy's house, and we went to a park with a couple guys, and I don't remember anything other than the next morning I woke up in her front lawn with her mom pulling me inside, and there was puke everywhere, and I had, like, dirt and, like, branches in my hair, and my clothes were, like, half off, and I was getting in trouble. And that was, like, alcohol, like, it never got any better than that. Like, that was the best it ever got. But I couldn't wait to do it again because I finally, that feeling, like those feelings when I was drinking, went away. You know, I felt okay. I felt like I fit in. I felt like I was good enough and pretty enough and funny enough. And I didn't care really what anybody else thought. And like my head shut up for the first time in a really long time. And I chased that. I wanted to feel like that all the time. Alcohol was a lot harder to get while I was in high school. In 10th grade, that private school became too much of a problem, so I switched back to public school, and I thought that would fix it. And I like dropped out within the first month and started smoking meth and sneaking out and running away. And I lost my job and I lost my car, and I failed all those classes. I lost my scholarship, my full ride to the college of my dreams, and I didn't care about any of that because when I was getting drunk and high, like, I was okay. I felt like the world just kind of like was a little bit quieter, and that's what I wanted. But that kind of stopped working. I started getting arrested. I started getting in a lot of trouble. The drugs and the alcohol weren't working as well to quiet that noise. It wasn't filling that hole that I had. And I didn't know what to do. And that was a really scary place to be in. I tried getting sober my first time when I was 17, and I like was halfway in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, halfway out of it. I was kind of picking and choosing what I was doing. But what it did was it gave me that first glimmer of, like, hope. Like, my life could be a little bit better. I didn't understand these people. These people were, like, happy, and they were, like, catastrophic events happening, and they were still okay. And I was like, I don't get it, you know? And at that point, I couldn't concede to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. Like, I got that drugs were a problem. Drugs were really bad. I couldn't handle that. But I wouldn't admit that alcohol was a problem also. And so I relapsed on alcohol and pills. And those 3 years I was out, they were excruciating. I couldn't, my ego was too big for me to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't want to come back and admit to you guys that I really had a problem, because I spent the first year of using, like, trying to convince you guys that I was okay and I really didn't belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. But life got really bad, you know. It was between 17 and 20, and I moved in with a guy who was almost 40 years old, and he was extremely abusive, and I couldn't hold down a job, and I'd sign up for school, and I wouldn't show up, and I had really no contact with my family, and I was miserable, and the alcohol wasn't shutting my head off anymore, and I didn't know what to do, and I called my dad up, and he was kind of over everything. It was like, we're taking you to a psych ward. And I was like, I don't know what to do. At this point, I'm homeless, and I'm doing really demoralizing things to have places to stay, and I'm doing things I said I would never do and crossing those lines like we do, and I can't stop. You know, I'm, like, on this roll, and it won't stop, and it keeps going. And so my dad took me to see a psychiatrist, and I hadn't drank for 2 days, and I was, like, super proud of myself. Like, this is awesome. And I was really sick and, like, shaky and throwing up, and I thought I had the flu. And I got there, and the psychiatrist was like, you're detoxing. Like, you need to go into a detox, and then you need to go into a rehab for 2 weeks. And I'm like, piece of cake. Like, and I went, because at the time it was cool to go to rehab. Like, everyone was going to rehab. Like, I'd go into rehab for 2 weeks. I'd make my dad happy. He'd buy me a house and a car, and I'd find a boyfriend, and, like, everything would be okay. And I had no intention of staying sober. And I stayed in that rehab for 4 months. They tricked me. And it was pretty gnarly. Like, I wasn't used to it. Like, waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning and cleaning, and if I said I wasn't doing something, I got in trouble and had to, like, walk around the track or wake up earlier and clean more and, like, all this stuff. And I didn't understand what was going on. And I spent the first month fighting it. You know, I fought everything they said, and I kept getting in trouble. And, you know, I didn't get kicked out. I don't know why. But what happened was that first night in detox, an H&I panel came in, and the three people, or four people that spoke on that panel, I'm still really good friends with. And I don't remember anything they said. I remember them being happy, and I was totally miserable. And I remember after the panel, this one girl had locked her keys in the car, and she had to hang out with us for another hour and a half waiting for her mom to bring her an extra set of keys, and she didn't freak out about it. She was, like, laughing and happy and hanging out, and everything was okay, and I couldn't wrap my head around that. Because when things like that happened to me, like, the world was ending, you know, like, crying and yelling and screaming and breaking stuff and just, like, a whole commotion. And I didn't get, like, that she was just okay. And I was like, if that's all I can get out of AA, like, that would be enough. You know, I wanted that. So that kind of happened. That brought back, like, this little bit of hope that, like, Alcoholics Anonymous might be able to do something for me. And so while I'm fighting everything at this rehab and sneaking off, then just getting in trouble and getting people kicked out, and it was awful. But they would take us to AA meetings every night. And I started hearing the message of Alcoholics Anonymous and hearing that hope and seeing that light in people's eyes. And at a meeting, I asked this woman to be my sponsor. I don't know why. I didn't know that I wanted what she had. You know, she was super tall and had blonde hair and huge boobs and a boyfriend and a really cool job. And, like, I wanted her outsides. You know, I wanted all that to be what I had. And she started taking me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my life started to change a little bit. You know, I started to be able to look at myself in the mirror and be okay with who I was. I started holding my head up a little bit higher. Like, and she was so patient with me. And she would sit there and she'd read it for me line for line. And when we'd get to a step, we'd work the step. And she was really into service. And so she just started dragging me around. My first year, I didn't have a driver's license. And I was under this illusion that my dad would buy me a car, and he didn't. So I had to take the bus. So it was either take the bus or follow this girl around, my sponsor. And she would pick me up after work for my sober living, and we'd go to a meeting, and we'd pick up other, you know, girls, you know, her other sponsees, and we'd go fellowship with them at coffee, and we'd go out to eat with everybody. And I just followed her around, and I did what she did. And I didn't know there was any other way to do Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, that was my example, and I'm so grateful for that, because had I found somebody that was, like, kind of half in it, I don't know what would have happened. And I got involved with this group that was just really active. And I just kind of did all that stuff with them. And I'm super grateful, because what happened was I had a lot of little things happen that first year. Like, they'd garnish my wages and I'd, like, freak out. Or I'd take the bus in the wrong direction and I'd have, like, a complete meltdown and be like, I can't do this anymore. And I got through all those things. And I had a year. Like, all of a sudden, I'm sober for a year, and I had this huge party, and it was great, and, like, I thought I was just, like, amazing, and there were, like, I had real friends in my life, and I, you know, I got my driver's license back, and I got a different job, and I moved out of that sober living, and life was kind of falling into place, and everything was going really well, and, December 20th, a month and 10 days after my 1 year, my dad fell through a skylight and died, and that was my biggest fear, my one reservation, my one, if I lose my dad, I'm not staying sober anymore. And I had talked to him in the morning, and because of this program, and I didn't ask him for anything. I just called to say hi. And we made plans to get together for Christmas. And then the next phone call I got, you know, from my brother later that day was that, he'd been in an accident, and I didn't know what to do. And I drove to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got there like 2 hours early, and there were people there, and I don't know why. And I just sat there, and I didn't know what else to do. And I got a phone call from my cousin that said, I need you to hand your phone to somebody, and I love you. And she came and picked me up from the meeting, and I kind of knew what had happened. But what happened was, before, like, within minutes of me finding out that news, the people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous showed up for me. And by the time I got back to the house, there were, like, 20 people there. And I was, you know, the next few months, AA showed up for me. You know, the people that were doing this deal walked me through all of that. That was the worst experience of my life, sober or not. Getting loaded was never as painful as that experience was. But what happened was my reaction to it was different this time. And it's because I had been doing the work in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, if I hadn't been as involved as I was, I don't think I would have made it through that. And people were annoying, and they wouldn't leave me alone, and they loved me through it, and they'd take me to meetings, and they'd help me get up and take a shower, and I didn't know how to do anything, and I lost my job because I couldn't function, and you guys continued to show up for me, and I was awful to be around at the time. Like, I was mean. Like, some of you think that I can be a bitch now. Like back then, like, I was not fun to be around, and people still loved me, you know, and that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. It's given me a life that, like, through good and bad, like, I wouldn't trade that for anything. And what happened was I felt like a newcomer all over again. Like, life was real all of a sudden. Like, it wasn't just the, like, my wages are garnished, I take the bus, and I do that. Like, life was real, you know, and I had to grow up really, really fast. And I got to start sponsoring people, and I got to jump back in this. And I got to ask for help and be humble and say that I don't know how to do this. And I'm probably out of time. I don't know. Where am I at? But what happened, I just want to talk about YPAL a little bit. So my dad died December 20th, and ACIPAW was in San Diego February of that year. And by this point, you guys won't leave me alone. People in AA are there 24/7, like, babysitting me and watching me. I don't want to live anymore. I don't want to drink drinking is not an option. I know that's not going to solve anything, but I'm done. And I got off work, and two of my friends showed up at my house and were like, you're going to ACIPAW. And I'm like, what the F is ACIPAW? Like, I've never been to a YPAW conference. They're like, you're going down there. I'm like, I don't have money, and I can't go, and I have work, and I have all these excuses. And they're like, we've taken care of everything. You're staying in our hotel room. Like, you're going. You don't have a choice. And I told them on the way down there that I'd give it one more shot. Like, this was, like, I'll give this one shot, and then afterwards, like, I'm killing myself if it doesn't work. Like, I can't live life like this anymore. I don't know how to do it. And So we drove down there, and I was, like, totally miserable, and we get down there, and we go to the main meeting, and it's cool, whatever. There's a lot of people. I'm really anxious, like, not really my thing. And my friends all go off and do their own thing, and it's, like, 3 o'clock in the morning, and I went to where the... They have panels, like, 24/7, and I went to one of the panels, and it happened to be when tragedy happens in the family. And there were 3 speakers. I don't remember what 2 of them talked about, but this one guy got up, and he was sharing his story. He had flown down there from Fresno, and he shared his story about how he was 17 years old, and he had 9 months sober, and both his parents were murdered in front of him by his uncle. And I got it. Like, I felt what he felt. Because people in AA would be like, oh, I get it. My dad died when he was, like, 100 years old of, like, old age or this and that. Or my dog died, and I get your pain. And I'm like, fuck you. You don't get anything. Like, you don't know what I'm going through. And this kid, you know, got through it, and he stayed sober. And I felt it. Like, I could understand him. And then he continued to share about, I had sat down with my dad 2 or 3 times to do amends. And, to make an amends to him. And I never did it because I felt like everything was going so well. Why am I going to ruin it now by, like, bringing up all this stuff? And so he shared in his story how he had just gotten to his 9th step and he hadn't made an amends to his parents yet. And so after the meeting, I'm, like, sobbing, hysterical, like, delirious from sleep. And I go up to him after the meeting and I'm like, I know you have... He shared about his girlfriend, and I don't know why. I'm like, I'm not trying to be creepy, and I know you have a girlfriend, but, like, I really need to talk to you. And he spent the next 5 hours sitting with me outside, chain-smoking cigarettes, talking to me about getting through this pain and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and staying sober and being able to help people about it. And it was the first time that since that event had happened that I felt like I could maybe be okay. And that hope started coming back to me again. And, you know, I really feel like that event saved my life, you know, and for that, I'm really grateful for, you know, young people events and for people showing up. You know, had he not shown up to do that, I don't know, I wouldn't have heard that message, you know, and that's why it's super important to me now that when I'm asked to do something in Alcoholics Anonymous that I don't say no unless I have a legitimate excuse. You know, Sarah called me today and asked me to speak, and, like, I thought for a second of, like, every reason why I couldn't do it. Like, I'm working, and then, like, I'm off at 2, like, that doesn't work, or I'm really tired, or I have to do this, or I have to do that, and I was like, I don't get to say no today. Like, I had no legitimate reason to not be here, and, you know, it's from that experience that I don't get to say no. You know, I get to show up, and I get to participate, and I get to be of service, and, you know, I'm really grateful for that. And since then, I've kind of been in and out of young people in AA, and I try and show up when I can. And, you know, I'm grateful for the program, because not only has the program helped solve, you know, I don't drink or do drugs anymore, but it's given me a life that, like, I never would have had. It wasn't possible for me. This wasn't in my cards. You know, I moved to Utah 2 years ago. Weird. Sorry, I'm still here. And, you know, but I get to do these things, and I get to have these life experiences, and life gets to be okay, you know, and I get to have a little bit of peace. And it's through, you know, sponsorship and working the steps in this book and showing up to meetings and having service commitments and doing the whole deal, not just some of it. And I'm not perfect at it. You know, when I moved up here, I had a really hard time getting involved in AA, and I wasn't, you know, being actively sponsored, and I was miserable, and I complained about it, and I let you guys know how horrible AA was in Utah, and I finally got a little bit humble and was like, okay, people are staying sober out here. It's obviously working. And I got to ask a woman to sponsor me, and I get to go through the steps again, and it's an amazing process, you know, and it's this, I don't even know. I'm really grateful that I get to be here. You know, I'm really grateful that I got to stay sober through all of that, and I kept going. My little brother was sober for a while, and he's drinking again, and I don't know why that, like, I got this deal and he didn't get it that time, you know, and I really hope that he makes it back in, but it's not up to me. You know, I don't get to control that, and I really wish I did sometimes, but I don't. You know, I get to trust in a higher power that he knows what he's doing and what's going on, and I just get to keep putting one foot in front of the other, and I keep showing up when I don't want to show up. So I'm really grateful to be here, and thanks for letting me share. Hope that made sense.